Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. I got hit totally by the Dark Ages this morning. The realization that there's no one intelligent out there. Even the people I agree with, people I used to agree with, like all type, they flail, they get old, they get their true interest eventually shows. I had many realizations in my life that all type was not trustable, but to see Steve Saylor just arguing against me with no argument, really, just passive aggressive, really gay. That's what I realized. This guy is deeply gay. I don't know if he has sex with men, but holy shit, is he acting fabulous on Twitter right now? Rather than just engage with my point, as a reminder, a simple summary of yesterday. Steve Saylor says, oh, there's a difference between African IQ and African-American IQ. Therefore, environmental differences matter. My point on this is to say, I don't know that. I don't know that. I don't know that you just discovered the perfect natural experiment that has mystified scientists for so long. I don't know that at all. There's way too much selection. First, I look at the American behavior just on the side of whites. You can see that the American person is fundamentally different from a European, although we come from a European genetic pool. And when I conceive of the American genetic pool, I conceive of a high liberty-loving people, at least the people that used to form the main demographic of America, white people. I think of them as laissez-faire, withdrawn, escape the problem, escape the overpopulation of Europe in the 17th century, and therefore be selected for liberty-seeking and space-seeking behaviors. That is an event of selection. It's an event of selection that the Atlantic has imposed. Basically, the traversement of the Atlantic in and of itself imposed a selection event. Was there an engineer involved in this? Was there someone planning, I'm going to make America a place of liberty? No. It happened in and of itself from what Charles Darwin calls natural selection. And you don't need a complex system of thoughts and planning to have natural selection happen. Now, the fact that I would have this to explain to a leftist, perhaps I could deal with it. But to have this to explain to Steve Saylor, there's something wrong here. There's something wrong with these people who are developing Twitter account, raking them up into the racialist sphere, and who can't adhere to basic evolutionary analysis of this kind. But there he is, you know, on Twitter all day. He's saying that slave ships were like an algebra test for survival, really? We're talking about the difference of IQ between 70 IQ in Africa, as he frames it, and 85 IQ in America. You're going to tell me you can't possibly think of, you can't conceive of a way in which a 15 IQ gain points could differentiate in terms of survivability for the slaves versus their root population in Africa. The slave lives in a white society, has to interact with whites, has to work for whites. I mean, we made Chihuahua from wolves. We made Chihuahua from wolves within a few thousand years, maximum. And you're going to tell me you can't possibly imagine an event in the life of a slave where intelligence matters enough that an 85 IQ has more chance of survival than a 70 IQ. So Steve Saylor uses misrepresentation, comedy, but non-engagement, really. Non-engagement. Hermit M. says, people are emotional, Jeff. You control your emotions. We also control ours. Don't lose total hope in all humanity. I'm losing hope. This morning, I just accepted that the Dark Ages has started, and it's gonna suck forever on this earth. It's really sucks. I'm fully blackpilled. Today, I was like, I almost want to apologize publicly to my girlfriend because I was like this all day and reflective, and it's like, no, she hasn't done anything for, again, it's really just Twitter got to me. The black pill of Twitter just boom, downed on my mind and made me totally zombie today. Doubting Thomas says, Jeff, for Sailor, there is a fairly straightforward counter for the environmental question. Do minority Asian and white immigrants living in Africa have 20 points less IQ? That is a very interesting one. Now, it's too imperfect. I wouldn't use this argument, let me tell you, because you're going to have the whole discussion of, well, is a Chinese person moving to Africa really living the African environment? But it's an interesting question, because in that debate, you could get to the realization, hey, if Chinese people are carrying environments with their genes, isn't it possible that there is no environment? That basically the environment is the Chinese family or the white family, and therefore it's a bunch of genes. I like your point. I wouldn't use it in a debate. There's just too many minds to step on. And yes, Stephen Robinson, I'll be talking about the ETH acceptance. Just Gary Gensler just folded. Gary Gensler folded, and that's good news for crypto. It's just the politicians have started making laws that were basically binding the end of Gensler, and Gensler was delaying the approval of the ETH ETF. Now Gensler, all of a sudden, the law passes, and he's like, okay, well, there's nothing anymore we can do. So accepted. DK Shadow says, folded like a cheap lawn chair. Yeah, I mean, and all this guy was doing is a stand-in for the elite. This is also the Dark Age team. We're stuck in a Dark Age. What was the purpose of this fucking puppet of the system? Gary Gensler.
I'm going to slow down the success of cryptocurrency. We're going to just make it hard. We're going to bug the life of a random company. Hard to say. Here, too much liberty. Ah!
And in the end, it was inevitable. It was inevitable that crypto would get accepted. It's like, how are you going to start making the argument? Oh, yeah, we have special laws for Bitcoin, but for ETH, we don't quite know. No, it was untenable, this whole just make people's lives miserable just in the crypto industry. It was absolutely untenable, and the politicians were starting to shake in their pants. There's even a politician in the debate that said, if crypto becomes the money, we will lose control of our taxation power. Oh, you guessed it. This guy was right. It's like, yeah, that's one of the beauties. It's going to be much harder to tax crypto than it is to tax employment. And he was totally right in his analysis. We're about to create two classes of people, the working class that will be constantly drained and pressed like a lemon by the system of taxation, and then a relatively free-flowing, virtual, at some point untraceable, to some extent untraceable, movements of money happening on the blockchain, and yet happening in front of the eyes of everyone. That's what's beautiful. But before I talk about crypto, coming back to Steve Saylor's interaction with me, This is not an intellectual. This is a guy who got selected for sassy responses to the libtards, basically. And this is where I realized that just the depth of the Dark Age. It's that we're gonna have leaders rising. They're gonna be selected by Twitter standard rather than intellectual standard. And it's not that the selection on intellectual standard works anyways in our academia. So we're going to end up with these leaders who have been selected because they can be like, snap! Oh no, you blue-haired feminist. Here's where you're wrong about sex. And the sassiest are going to be at the top. And it's going. And when you start engaging with them seriously, you're going to realize, no, all they really have is this sassy attitude. And it doesn't matter if you're a blue-haired feminist, SJW, or a real thinker who's bringing a legitimate counter to their argument. They're gonna have the sassy attitude no matter what. Steve Saylor, is this guy gay? Because I would totally imagine a gay guy talk like this. And slave ships were like algebra test for survival? Really? How do you know that slave ships weren't a survival test? I'm asking seriously. If you're so confident, there must be a reason you're confident. Not just the fact that it sounds ridiculous, because let me tell you, pretty much everything in science sounds ridiculous until there's evidence for it. So yesterday I laid out some hypotheses, possibilities. What if the very, very low IQ slaves weren't useful? What if they weren't useful in a way that would lead their owners to not sell them, reduce their reproduction, or even kill them? You know, I can imagine a 70 IQ trying to get them. I have a greenhouse here. You give me a 70 IQ to increase my tomato production, I have no clue how to do this. I have no clue how it's feasible. Like, I have to plant every seed in the spring. I have to light them up with electricity. There's all sorts of risks. There needs to be constant care, constant monitoring. Water levels, not too much water, not too little. And then I have to transplant these delicately into my greenhouse. The plants are big like this. Eventually, at the end of the summer, they're big like this. I have to engage in thinking about sun angles, about when I will pick up the tomatoes, about the cycles of life, about the pollinization of these flowers. I don't know what I can do with a 70 IQ. That would make me produce much more tomatoes. And so, you know, if you were to give me a 70 IQ slave, I would send it back to you and say, look, I'm not interested in slavery of any kind. I don't benefit from this. There's nothing. And perhaps a 85 IQ is the threshold for usability on a slave market. What does Steve Saylor know about this? He knows nothing. And if we're talking about interbreeding, perhaps, like, if you're talking about interbreeding, you're talking about the fact that white males or white females or Jewish males or Jewish females were at some point attracted to these slaves. And there were love stories. We could make movies about them. Beautiful love stories in the cotton field, hand in hand, black and white, lit up by the sun. Traveling of the cameras as you see them become silhouettes in black and white. If such love stories have happened, then the black populations of today in America has been subjected to sexual selection from minds that were 100 IQ on average, from white minds. You don't think that white minds can farm a 15 IQ point gain through their sexual selection? I mean, have you went into a bar? Have you approached women? They are like detector robots for intelligence. They are like fleas to caramel. They are finding intelligence, identifying it, checking for various signs of social IQ and various signs of social capabilities, excluding autists, and boom, they want to fuck this guy. Of course, if there was interbreeding, it's not just the white genes getting into the black population. It's the black population's genes being subject to sexual selection because white females want an intelligent guy, and it doesn't matter if, you know, the intelligence difference is between 70 or 85 or 100 and 115. If they can get a guy who can tell a joke or two or play some saxophone jazz or whatever, they're going to be charmed. Same thing for the males, probably, but at a lesser extent. I'm sure that males select for IQ to some extent in just finding their partner interesting to speak with. So to all the people who are bringing data to me that says, oh, well, there's no correlation between white admixture in black African-Americans and intelligence, I say, okay, I've never said, that's why I didn't commit yesterday when I started this argument with Steve Saylor. I never commit to an hypothesis in particular, because what I'm alarmed at is the statement of Steve Saylor without knowing. What I'm alarmed at is the assumption. Then, if you want 1,000 different hypotheses, we can talk about them. But I've never said that it is the white admixture that brought intelligence into the African-American population. What I'm saying is there could be all sorts of selection events that lifted the bottom of the African-American population in a way that didn't happen in Africa. And as long as you have two different evolutionary histories in two different societies, and oh, as it turns out, the society that has higher IQ people, that has higher IQ selection in their sexual mores, that has imprisonment, that has a pursuit of low IQ criminals, that put them in jail so they can't reproduce, as it turns out, this very society is the one that has increased black IQ by 15 points. And you're going to tell me, therefore, environment? I say, is it possible that there is an evolutionary force that white people carry alongside them? Wherever they go, in boats, in cars, in pedestrian mode, wherever they go, we have this aura of selection. And the dogs around us, they become kinder. Ah, isn't that fascinating? Did that happen over 200,000 years? No. It happened within 1,000 years. The difference between a Chihuahua and some other dog happened probably within the last 200 years. So we have this aura of selection that we applied to everything. And what Steve Saylor is asking us to believe with his appeal to ridicule and that is so weird. That is such a laughable position. What is appealing to us is to suddenly believe that this aura of selection that has accidentally spilled onto our dogs, our cats, our pigs, our chicken, our cows, ourselves, our males, our females, our children, suddenly was suspended. We rolled the red carpet of non-selection for the black population of Africa so that their IQ were never touched. This is how ridiculous what Steve Saylor is presenting. That somehow, oh no, we could do the dogs, we could do the pigs, we could do ourselves, we could do everything around us. We could shape it all evolutionarily. But the black African was untouchable. He is a pristine carrier of the initial IQ of his ancestors 400 years ago. Bullshit. Not just Saylor, as DK Shadow reminds me, But Alt-Type, fucking Alt-Type joins the conversation against me and for Sailor. Unbelievable, these people. They think, you can see therefore that they've all integrated the racial talking points from a proper scientific analysis of the existing ideas. But when it comes to going in uncharted territory, they don't have a scientific mind. And the difference you see in the last 2 days in this whole fight with Steve Saylor, Alt-Type, and me is nothing else than the difference between, and I'm sorry to have to evoke it, I hate to do it, but it's the PhD effect, okay? this is the difference between a doctor and non-doctors. They kind of can reach the same looks in appearance, but they don't follow a true scientific procedure. So they're kind of walking in a dark forest when it comes to understanding what is a good method to make an affirmation. Where is the truth coming from? Why does JF insist so much as doubting a small point like this? It's because the edifice of science, my friends, is built on artists like me. And if we let one thing go, if I let this go from Steve Saylor, what happens down the line, 10 years down the line? Now, there's a bunch of people convinced that, oh, yeah, this was proven by the slavery case. Environment can allow us to boost 50 points of IQ. And the down the line, it's Marxism and it's communism, let me tell you. This is where I'm worried to see a Steve Saylor, because it's like, okay, this guy is funded by Jewish entities. He's doing his subversion work. But when you understand the end of what he's saying, because the end is, oh, well, if we did it between 70 and 85, what keeps us from doing it to 100? The end is the revolutionary phenotype. The end is, all right, we have so much power just with equality and Marxism. We did it before, we will do it again. And then you bump into the realization of nature is that, no, you can't. You don't have the power to control society so much that you give people boosting points of IQ, 15 points. That is not something that happens. When you get a 15-point boost of IQ on an average of a population, you did something evolutionary. You played with genes in a way that you don't even understand. And even if you were to try to do it intentionally, you'd probably cause the opposite effect because you're just too stupid. That is the great realization of the Dark Ages. People are just too stupid. Like, he's talking to me like a meme. It's like, okay, I bring those points, and I'm like, oh, how do you know? How do you know that the slave ships weren't an algebra test? How do you know that convincing a bunch of white people to keep you alive isn't an intellectual challenge? How do you know that 70 IQ is sufficient for labor in a white society? But by the way, a 70 IQ today cannot be employed. This is what's fascinating to me. It's like this guy, oh, well, there's no employment available in 2024 for a 70 IQ. A 70 IQ cannot make it into the army. A 70 IQ cannot work at McDo. But Steve Saylor somehow believes that there were jobs for 70 IQs in 1619. Massive amounts of job and, oh yeah, bring them in, 70 IQ, no problem. What changed? What happened? Are we picking the cucumber differently so much? Is that what it is? A 70 IQ, so a 70 IQ cannot work today, but there was infinite amount of jobs for them in the US in 200 years, 300 years ago. So I'm challenging on the basis of doubt and serious doubt on actual scientific and historical questions. He answers, what a douche. You are in over your head. So that's why I say all this guy can do is ask passive-aggressive questions in the most fabulous snap way possible, trying to undermine serious hypotheses with tone. And here he is doing it again. What a douche. You are in over your head. Papa JF is not in over his head in anything. Papa JF has a PhD. You don't come close to the level of intelligence and talent I've had to demonstrate in my life. And so I say, yet in 2 days, I haven't heard a single valid argument coming from you. He says, in other words, you don't have any quantitative arguments to make. You are in way over your head, aren't you? He's repeating this like a fucking AI. Steve Saylor doesn't pass my Turing test. I was like, what is happening? How is a guy repeating, you are in way over your head? Uh-huh, you're in way over your head, aren't you? Huh? How does one man think that this is good countering on Twitter? And I had to think the possibility that perhaps he's not the one tweeting. Perhaps it's some AI that's just stuck in a while loop and I threw something at the AI that it can't handle. This is an aspect of the dark age. We won't ever know if we're even talking to people. And this whole idea that I have a quantitative argument to make, I don't, because you haven't come to me with facts. I'm saying, oh yeah, your claim, the facts and method doesn't sound to me. And so in face of your claim of environmental influence, I will remain agnostic. I will say that I believe nothing of it. And I believe you haven't brought sufficient evidence for me to develop a belief. I don't have quantitative arguments to make here. You want me to scribble some math on paper to make it look like I'm serious? The problem is, when you reject the validity of an experiment, you know nothing. You just accept that you know nothing from there. And if you want to bring me something that you think is solid, bring it. But I have no quantitative argument to make about any of what we discussed, because there is no quantity. There is no quantity on your side either, by the way. What's the quantity of environmental influence that you've isolated with your imperfect experiment? You don't have a quantity. But of course, these low-level thinkers of the Twitterati sphere, unfortunately, they're too much into data, so much so that they think that truth cannot emerge if there's not a data statement. You're not backing up your claims with data? Big data? I'm sure you've seen some people like this. They are the most annoying people ever. You're not backing your claim with data? Holy shit. No, there's no need for data to be contesting the validity of an experiment. I don't have to develop an experiment that proves your experiment is wrong. Sources, sweetie? Says Nicholas Petrus. So that's what I told him. I don't have a quantitative argument to make because I'm not the one making the affirmation. You have a burden to back up what you came up with, that is, that the African-American difference in IQ is evidence of environmental influence on IQ. Rodila Sid says, in my PhD defense, I had one professor ask me, what was my contribution to science? Another question at the end was, what is my philosophy? Since PhD means doctor in philosophy. So I had to talk about my philosophy of science in front of the panel. It lasted about 2 hours 30 and I was exhausted after. Oh yeah. you know, PhD, you know, the academia is corrupt, but it still selects for relatively good thinkers. So when you end up in these processes of academia, they will challenge you and they're not all bad. It is a demanding process. And I wish I was in academia still to make it hard for the new generation to get in. But that is not a requirement anymore. In fact, they want you to let everyone pass, you know? They don't want failure. So It's an unfortunate thing, but there used to be a process of meritocracy leading to academia, and it was demanding to pass. Hermit Ham sends a super chat. Thank you so much for those who are supporting the show using the dollar button under the Odyssey chat. Odyssey super chats are my favorite way to receive support for the show. Alternatively, you can also use Entropy. If you want to send a Odyssey super chat, make sure you add a payment method in your account to see the dollar sign. Hermit M says, I didn't want to understand what you said about humanity being stupid, perhaps to save. Now I do. Too stupid to save. Yes, that is a hard thing. But when I've gone through writing the revolutionary phenotype, the question came. It's a double question where the whole world was in my hand, kind of. It's like, okay, I have developed this theory. I know that the revolutionary phenotype is the end of humanity. I know that if we engage down that road, we die. And there's two questions were on my mind. First, if I publish it, do I cause the phenotypic revolution or do I stop it? Is the publishing of it going to speed up the phenotypic revolution or slow it down? And second, do I want to speed it up so that we can get done with these fucking apes? Or do I want to slow it down or stop it so that we can have a continued human existence? And, you know, it's kind of a double-digit multiplication of sorts. It's, well, if the first question's answer is number one, then I should do number two. If the first question is number two, I should do number one. It's across the bizarre moral decision. I just ended up thinking, well, whatever, you know. Whatever I cause, I cannot expect. And therefore, I don't know if the publishing of the book will result in the end or the beginning of humanity. And at the same time, I don't care because I don't know if humans are worth saving. So that's how I resolved the moral conundrum of does it need to be published? For the truth, yes. For the truth to be known. And I thought, at least with a published theory, you end up having people, if they do commit their own end through it, if they do commit civilizational suicide by adopting that route, at least I can say I told you so. And to me, that's the great moral weight that ended up dominating. It's that I don't know about good and bad for sure, about what are the consequences of the publication of the book. But I know that I love to tell people, fuck you, I told you so. Papa Jeff is so much more intelligent than you, than I knew it would happen, and you did it while I was telling you it would happen, and then it happened. And so that is the moral preference that ended up dominating. James says, speed it up. JF proceeds to laugh like a mad scientist. I mean, when you think about it, if you publish the theory, and even if people wouldn't want to extinguish humanity to begin so, the publishing of the theory leads to people having advanced knowledge of what's about to happen, and then they start making arguments in their head about why, oh no, JF is wrong. So basically, the publishing of the theory leads to people developing a resistance against anti-TRP arguments. That is a resistance for the purpose of doing better arguments pro-genetic modifications. Like, they can do all sorts of things. They can discredit me as a scientist. They tried this. They can try to write hit pieces about me. They can go into my personal life, try to destroy my personal life. They tried this. Everything that results from the publishing of the book is leading stupid people to become more entrenched in their stupidity. Ayan says, is Dawkins aware of your book? I'm sure he is. Absolutely certain he is. I don't know if he read it, but I would recommend that he reads it. Hermit M says, I understand TRP the moment you hinted at it on Warski. Ironclad process of how the human book closes, but you made the effort, so if there is a soul, yours is saved. All right, thank you. Doubting Thomas says, JF, why would the African living in America versus Africa have a larger gap in IQ than the Asia living in America versus Africa? Wouldn't the gap for the black person be smaller according to the leftist worldview because of their oppression in America? Well, forget about oppression. This is not a worldview that works. But if you ask me, why would there be a 15 IQ gain, whereas with the Chinese immigrants, we may have a 5 or 10 IQ gain? Well, those first are very different events of selection. Do you need between 70 and 85 IQ to survive as a slave 300 years ago? And do you need 105 to 110 IQ to fill an immigration form in 2024? Those are two very separate selection events. There's this as a first issue. Secondly, you can't affirm a linearity in the quantity, because 70 to 85 is a bunch of skills that are at the bottom of survivability. Like the selection process here could have been death. When you talk about the difference between a Chinese immigrant and the average Chinese population, you're talking about a much lesser distinction of environment. You're talking not about literally Chinese people being unable to care for themselves. You're really just talking about subtle favoring of slightly higher intelligence. They tend to travel more. They tend to see the world as their oyster. Maybe they tend to be better at filing an immigration form, at getting enough money to go through the immigration process. And those are much subtler selection event. Nuke from Persia says, I wonder if that MIT guy actually read TRP after the talk with JF. Maybe not, maybe not. Shrink Mamel sends a super chat. He says, JF, I'm under the impression this environmental determinism by Steve and others will cause industrial collapse. Yes, it can cause major societal consequences down the line, which is why I'm extremely annoying on the details here, because this is the difference between meritocracy and Marxism. Down the line, if you go on believing, starting from today, that we have found a way to boost African IQ by 15 points. Well, first, my question to you is, what are you waiting for? just take the plane, go to Africa and do it. Do it. Do it. If you believe this, you believe the malleability of the mind, independent of evolution, independent of genes, you are already down the path of Marxism. Steven Robinson says, JF, did you ever hear back from the YouTuber who copied off TRP? No, these people, this is another aspect of the Dark Age. They just go on, do their little things, get their little attention on social media, but they don't care that there's a plagiarism case opened against them. That reminds me of someone else. Tarmo sends a super chat on entropy. He says, JF, do you think there is any merit to the idea that some woman will grow to resent the male in relationships where birth control is used? The female brain might interpret it as if the male is infertile and not evolutionarily fit. Thoughts? That is a very interesting theory. I have never thought about this. But yes, absolutely. A lot of the female to male aggression of the modern world could be explained largely by this. It's a very interesting theory. Like, the females have evolved to start annoying their male if they don't see a baby popping out after 9 months. And they become more and more annoying, more and more frustrated. And in the end, it's all because of the birth pill they take. That would be a very interesting hypothesis. I don't know if it's true, but it's a very interesting hypothesis. I realized I just laughed. And I realized I just laughed. And in fact, they say the laughter, the new symbol of the far right. Look at this Brittany Pettibone with her boyfriend or husband. Look, I didn't mean by my laughter, I didn't mean to do any extremism. I apologize. I didn't know that laughter was now a symbol of the far right. MI5 Surveillance sends a super chat. Thank you so much. He says, there's no reason to delete any emails sent these days. Clean your inbox yet, but not your outbox. Anyone who does so has either a very low-tech IQ or something to hide. Oh, yeah. The idea of deleting emails is ridiculous in this day and age, because if I'm a federal agent, I don't even need to go through your whole emails to find the ones in which you're doing some shady things. I just have to say to Google, can you put the deleted emails of this guy in a separate folder for me, please? And from tens of thousands of your email history, I get 3 deleted emails. And I'm like, let's see. Let's see what's in there first. So I don't have to go through. So I don't engage in criminality personally. But whenever I have a secret of mine in my email, you know what I do? I don't delete it. I leave it up and I'm like, here you go, motherfucker. And I think about the state agents who will be having to spend 6 months sifting through every single non-deleted email of mine. I'm spamming the surveillance state. I'm like, you know what? I wouldn't want this to leak, so I'm not going to delete it. I'm just going to leave it there. And as a result, the state agents, if they wanted to surveil me, they would have a headache of a pile of email to go through. And I'm like, whenever I log off my email account, I'm like, ah, I got you. I didn't delete the important emails. Stoic Saxon says, nothing truly deletes. They have it all. Oh, yeah, especially in the age of Gmail. I mean, in general, if you're someone confiding to crime in an email, you are fucking ridiculous. McDonald manager goes off on customers.
I've been here for almost 17 hours. I don't give a fuck. Get the fuck out of my drive.
Oh, we have a fabulous tone of speech. He doesn't give a fuck anymore.
Fuck you, you little fucking bitch.
What'd you say, motherfucker?
Let's go.
Get the fuck out! Fucking bald-headed ass! Come over here!
Why are you losing your cool? Because you work 17 hours, but you are working at this wage, so you're getting more money. So what's the problem? Just be a little lazy. Just be a little down. So it's even easier money for you. Now, if you start harassing the customers...
Over here, beat that ass!
You little fucking bitch ass, motherfucker!
Fuck off, motherfucker, you fucking retarded!
Get in the truck!
Get your ass back in your fucking car!
I'll beat your fucking head in!
Get your ass back in your fucking car, retard!
You fucking bitch!
Yep, you're going... You're getting fired today.
You know what? You can suck my dick!
Go.
Lose your job!
Okay. Silver Spider says, imagine if he had a tough job. Nick Fuentes, very, very good thinking here. Very happy with what Nick Fuentes has been doing. He's been very serious at keeping himself upstream in terms of information analysis.
It's criminal. It's absolutely criminal. And there's another word for it. It's treasonous. It's treachery. We wouldn't tolerate it from any other people.
He's talking about the fact that our whole class of decision making is Zionist Jews.
Conservatives wouldn't tolerate it. From any other immigrant group or non-white group or American adversary, you wouldn't tolerate it. From illegal immigrants, you wouldn't tolerate it. From China, you wouldn't tolerate it. From Muslims, if there was a group chat of Muslim billionaires convincing America to love Sharia law, it'd be all over Fox News. It would be, that is what the 2024 campaign would be about. It's so wrong. And it's about patriotism. It's not about left and right. You don't need, it's not ideological. You don't need to be left wing or right wing to understand what's going on here. It's about whether you love this country or not. Do you?
Absolutely. He's right on target. I have only great words to say about Nick Fuentes these days. He says, I am so sick and tired of seeing the obvious shilling for this foreign country and its tentacles in every right-wing movement in the world. It doesn't have to be like this. Again, another so-called right-wing leader, Geert Wilders, hand in hand with the Israeli PM. And the control of Jews, at this point, they're making jokes about it on Daily Wire. Gentile News Network was saying, we're winning so badly that the Daily Wire was forced to insert a Jews run the world joke in their commercial. This is not trivial. This is a bunch of Jews in a Jewish outlet with Jewish actors played by Jewish talking heads making a joke about Jewish control.
Hey, 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 nobody calls cut on my set but me.
What, do you run Hollywood now?
Hey, 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 nobody calls cut on my set but me.
What, do you run Hollywood now?
These very cheap parodic comedic performances of the Daily Wire are, they're ridiculous to me. They're low level. But here we have, what is this? This is a bunch of Jews mocking the idea that an American would suggest, and somehow the American is played by this Jew here, and he's suggesting to a Jewish producer that, what is it? You're running Hollywood now? Well, evidently Jews are running Hollywood. They're down to running the Daily Wire. So how is it that I have a Daily Wire joke that mocks a reality that they implement themselves? You're laughing at yourselves? What is it? How does that work? I'm uncomfortable in front of this humor. Hermit Ham says, so he's got a shred of integrity. You're talking about Nick Fuentes? Yeah, I think he's, despite the fact that he's been isolated and now he's back on the public space through Twitter, he's continued learning about stuff. And sometimes he calls out those gay ops from groups of Jews that are really just plotting. They're just plotting about misdirecting Christian audiences to some nefarious direction. And that's what they do in these gay up channels of discussion that we keep discovering again and again. From Kraut and T to Lomez, it's always what it is. Zero Hedge was laughing their ass off because Peter Hatez blocked them. Peter Hatez is this puppet of the regime that was somehow became a sensation in science education when it came the time to lie about the vaccine. And, you know, Zero Hedge was once banned for their coverage of vaccine critical coverage. So he says, first, they banned us from Twitter. Now the best that these trust the science criminals can do is block us because we have an expose of that was covered by Zero Hedge. And the people like Peter Hatez are in hot water. They are in big trouble because they are literally plotting in emails to delete emails that are inconvenient and that they wouldn't want the public to see because they were speculating about their true belief that yeah, you know, COVID looks like it may have been lab generated. And then they wanted to stand publicly to say, no, 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 we know it's not lab generated, it's natural origins. This whole plot of the noble lie of, we disagree scientifically, but publicly we will affirm something so that we don't seed disruption in the population, is being exposed. You are right. I need to be more careful. I mean, this is an NIH guy, Dr. David Morans, an NIH guy actively plotting against the government. How is that not treason? He's there in an email saying, oh, yeah, we have to be careful. Already, we have here nefarious intent against the state, because there he is publicly saying one thing and in private saying we have to hide the traces of us thinking differently. You are right, I need to be more careful. However, as I mentioned once before, I learned from our FOIA lady here how to make emails disappear after I am FOIA'd, but before the search starts, so I think we are all safe. Plus, I deleted most of those earlier emails after sending them to Gmail. This is an open, like, government employees plotting against you so that you don't know the truth. Meanwhile, they're injecting stuff in your arm and claiming it's good and lying about it. They are plotting a lie against the American people, and these people have never lost their jobs. And these people have never lost their standing. You know, Peter Hottas is still out there posing as a serious scientist. Well, here you are with David Morans trying to talk to the staff to say, how do I avoid respecting American law? That is a conspiracy to violate civil rights. It's a crime, by the way. It's a crime of conspiracy, and we have it in text, written for sure. There's no way David Morans denies this is one of his emails. It came directly from his iPhone. And he did talk to a government employee to conspire against telling the truth to the American people. The American people is entitled by law, by FOIA. They are entitled by law to know everything you do on their behalf. You have plotted to erase records, to lie to them. Rodi Lacid says RICO case. I don't see how it's not a RICO case, a conspiracy against civil rights, a case of really a case of treason, because these people all have an oath to serve according to American law and American Constitution, but there they are actively planning a detour around it. Please pass this on to Peter, and I ask you both that nothing gets sent to me except to my Gmail. So you were trying to escape the public process of FOIA by passing through Gmail. I have some bad news for you. Google is part of the of the surveillance state. So sending stuff to your Gmail is not a security practice. You want real security practice? Hire Papa JF. Hire Papa JF. Papa JF will explain to you what you need to go through to truly have a serious secret conversation. It's not as easy as it sounds. With the help of our IT folks, I went over the whole computer and phone situation. Basically, you were deleting evidence. They loaded some anti-hacking software on my phone and discussed the situation with me. So you wanted to avoid hackers having access to your lies. Basically, my Gmail is now safe from FOIA and hacking on all of my devices, including government computer and phone and my private computer and iPad. So he secured a Gmail account to be covered from the government law. You have plotted to escape the law. I ask you both that nothing gets sent to me except to my Gmail. And make sure that what gets sent to my Gmail doesn't have a CC to another government employee who could be FOIA'd. So that is truly an extensive conspiracy, again, to hide information. We are all smart enough to know to never have smoking guns. And if we did, we wouldn't put them in emails. And if we found them, we would delete them. We all understand each other right here. This is Peter Daszak. This is some of the biggest people who have decided how the COVID crisis would unfold, how the vaccine promotion would unfold. It's Peter Hatters, EcoHealth Alliance people, Peter Daszak, and David Morans. This is what was happening at the top. They were like, you know what I'm saying? You know that I know that, you know, yeah, delete emails, yeah. Hermit Ham says, millions of lives in COVID for thousands of dollars. The guillotine cannot return fast enough. Oh, yeah, there's no road for the punishment of these people. Even these messages, which to me illustrate clear criminal behavior. You won't get prosecution for those because they were in line with the regime. Probably via FOIA or someone who didn't delete it, as I did. Parentheses, delete all of Peter's email and others relating to Origin when the shit started hitting the fan. So we have these emails, but they did a strong effort to delete them. The only reason we have them is that one of the CC'd people, one in the gang, wasn't fully doing the hacking in the way Morans wanted. What a low-level human being this Morans must be. I mean, he's out there orchestrating lies on the record like a fucking idiot. You don't know how to lie, man. This is not how lying is done. Lying is so hard. Lying for real is so hard. You wouldn't be able to handle it. You're an incompetent government employee actively conspiring against the people. You are a rat of this world. You belong in the sewers. Hermit M says, millions of lives in COVID for... Okay, this one I read. Thank you for your donation. Yeah, we're headed toward the end of the show, but I can't believe this is a 15-minute monologue in American politics in an election year. And it's Ben Shapiro saying, kill and rape Jews, win a state. And it's just Ben Shapiro doing the snake charming dance to charm. Sorry, I had to sneeze. To charm the rising snake of anti-Semitism and to put him back to sleep. I can't believe that we're talking about this with our American talking heads. We're talking about Israel and how the October 7th attack were terrible rapes and killings rather than American politics.
The question on the European continent for 150 years has been whether to appease evil, to give evil what it wants in the hope that evil will then suddenly become good or at least non-offensive, or whether to fight evil and allow others to fight evil. That battle did not end with World War II. That battle is ongoing. So yesterday, the state of Israel and the victims of October 7th, their parents particularly, there are some women who are kidnapped and are now presumably being held and raped by Hamas. And Israel and these parents released tape from October 7th of Hamas kidnapping these females. We're talking about women who are 18, 19.
So he's not talking about anything of concern to the American people. He's talking about concerns around female Israeli soldiers getting kidnapped and killed and some raped. Some on October 7th and some after. Listen, this is a foreign country. You are an American talking head. Why is it that in an election year, we have a 15-minute speech about how we should be concerned about these foreign female army? By the way, if you're in the army, you're playing the game of killing. So if the other side sometimes doesn't get killed, but instead kills you, I'm not particularly surprised. That is what war is. I'm not particularly interested at Ben Shapiro's promotion, really, of empathy toward the people that has nothing to do with us. Rodita Sid says 109 sounds a little low at this point. The number of countries or cities that Jews would have been expelled of. Yeah, that's a recurring meme. Shring Mamel sends a super chat. He says, I hear Trump might pick Doug Burgum as VP. He is the most pro-legal immigration Republican I can think of. Yeah, it's not looking good for Trump's presidency. I'm not excited at all. Not excited at all. I don't think we really have a good offer on the table in Trump versus Biden. You would expect that Trump should be so pissed at the system. I mean, they're trying to deprive him of wealth. They're trying to take his entire empire and sow it into the ground. I can't believe that he's not more anti-system. But I don't think we're going to get an anti-system presidency with the signs he's giving. Anyways, the SEC has officially approved the AllSpot Ethereum ETFs. Open the floodgates! So now the ETFs are standing at a standstill, that in the sense that Bitcoin ETFs are available and ETH ETFs are available. So that opens a competition, possibly. I think it's good for both, because if ETH was to rise incredibly high, that eventually that money flow would rise the price of Bitcoin too. But I don't think it's a case where ETH will flip Bitcoin all of a sudden. But I think it's just generally good for entry of flows of money into the crypto domain. I don't know if there will be an instant effect. I know that ETH was rising in price today in response. Will this hold, or will it be over more the long term? In any case, the bright days are ahead for the crypto world. I believe that something like ETH, that is a more intelligent blockchain, ultimately is very interesting long term. But I don't think it has to flip BTC necessarily within the next decade. But I personally, as a programmer who very much enjoys Solidity programming, Node.js programming, I really like blockchains. I really like the idea of functional public utilities of that sort. I think they change the world eventually. Defenestrator says ETH is a pre-mined shitcoin, no decentralized. Yeah, there is this problem. That is ETH sound money, or is ETH a ticket to a club of computational resource use? That is the great challenge that is brought upon the smart chain, the smart contract chain. And I don't have a full answer to this, even as someone who works in this domain. I don't know. Is it fundamentally impossible to have a currency that does both? And eventually, the ETH smart contract guys will be too tempted by inflationary drive, and ETH will inflate too much. Or eventually there will be changes in computational resources and they won't have a choice but to inflate ETH or make it more costly in some form. Is it the case that a money, to be a good money, needs to be like Bitcoin? It needs to be that it doesn't do anything else. That is a good question. And I, even as a fan of ETH, I'm open to the idea that ETH is not a sound money. You know, I don't care. I think that ETH is a sound project for sure. I don't know if it's a sound money. I'm personally all in on Bitcoin, so I'm like 99% in Bitcoin. I'm not telling you go into ETH. I'm not telling you this. But I just don't know where things are headed. It seems that the Michael Saylors of this world, the Bitcoin maximalists, have a great hold on the public discourse, and it may be the case that within the next few decades, Bitcoin remains the dominant way of preserving wealth, but perhaps there will be a rotation at some point. And perhaps ETH will show itself to be like the Nvidia of the stock market in a way. The thing that people go to for all these developments of needed technologies, you know. Swing it says, should I go full in ETH now? No. Do whatever you want. I'm not telling you one way or another. Those are risky bets. And Bitcoin to me is still a sure value. MI5 says, does JF recall the time Fuentes brandished a large hunting knife at him through the screen? Of course I do. Of course, Nick the Knife. I've even evoked this moment like 5 days ago on the show. I was talking about Nick the Knife. So yes, of course, those were the good days of the internet where we were on the internet, we were streaming, we were the first streamers, and we were sometimes drunk and sometimes partying, and it was a good time. I miss this very human moment of the internet. I miss it today. It's all the people that are rising, like the Steve Saylor. They're not really human to me. They don't fully engage. They have their defenses up. We didn't have our defenses up. We were kidding around. We're like, hey, JF, I'm going to kill you with a knife. That was fun. That was fun. Oh, my God, I miss this. Much love, everyone. And Shring Mamel, there are other people going for the Filipinos woman. Let me tell you, the Filipinos woman have been released on the market. They have vaginas and they are thirsty for sperm. What can I say? I don't know the Filipinos woman. That is not something I tried. But you guys have fun. It's a risky bet, but you have to make risky bets to get good things in life. Much love. I'll see you all tomorrow. Thank you.